Mitzvah Shin Chaf Tes 329 Shelo Neeso Peros Ha'ilon B'Shviyis Kederech She'osvin Osan B'chol Hashana. We should not gather the fruit of the trees on the Shemitah year as we do it every other year. Remember, we had a similar mitzvah regarding the svichim, that the stuff that grows in the fields just happens to sprout. So there's a similar mitzvah regarding the trees. Shelo nesof matzi yotziu ha'ilanos b'shana shviyas kederech she'osvin b'nei adam peros ha'ilanosan b'chol shana. So people should not harvest their orchards, vineyards, anything that has to do with trees. We know that grapevines are trees in halacha, same status. So the same way they do it every year. You have to make do it in a different way. Abal yeshlan lasos bedavar shinoi. You have to make a different way of harvesting them. Kedei laharos shakol hefker b'shanazo. We have to demonstrate that all the fruits are ownerless on the seventh year.
Where can you harvest fruit?
He'll explain. V'zehu perush es inevei nezirecha lo sivtzor. The grapes of your setting aside, you shall not harvest. What does that mean? Kilomar, shelo sivtzor kederech habotzrim. That doesn't mean you're not allowed to harvest them at all, because we know that you're allowed to harvest the grapes on the Shemitah year and eat them. It says, Shabbos haaretz lachem la'achla, that the fruit of the Shemitah year you're supposed to eat. It's a mitzvah, according to some, that to consume peros shviyas, the fruit of the seventh year. They have a certain level of holiness. And, you know, obviously, in order to eat them, you have to harvest them. So what does it mean? It means that you shouldn't harvest it in the normal manner of those who, here, you know, using the example of the grapes, that who harvest the grapes in the normal manner. Shekein ba'alav ha-perosh ha-makubal. That is the accepted interpretation of this halacha. Chmosh amru zichronam lebracha, mikan amru, Te'enim shel shviyas, in Masechah Shviyas, it says that figs of the Shemitah year, ein kotzin osan b'mukta, aval kotzahu b'charba. You're not allowed to harvest them with a fig harvester, whatever that is, a special implement designed for harvesting figs, but you're allowed to use like a sword, a knife, to cut them off from the tree. And fine, ve'ein dorchin anavim bagas, and you're not allowed to press grapes in a wine press. Aval dorechu ba'areva, but you're allowed to use just stam like a tub, in order to press the grapes, you know, stomp on them. They put them in your bathtub and stomp on them in order to make wine, but you're not allowed to use an actual wine press. Ve'ein osim zeisen bevad uvakotev, and you're not allowed to press olives into oil in an oil press. Aval kosei shu machnis levodida, but you're allowed to crush them and put them into another type of container, a small type of tub. So what does this mean? All these technical agricultural terms that we, city dwellers and people living 2,000 years after these terms were written down in the Mishnah and used to describe the contemporary agricultural implements, so we have no idea what these things are talking about. What's the basic message? The basic message is that you're not allowed to do it in a normal manner. You have to do it on a smaller scale and not in the formal way and the regular way that you do all these activities in a regular year. Uperush nezirecha. So what is the exact taich, so to speak? What's the translation of the pasuk in vein nezirecha lo sivtzor? You shall not harvest the grapes of your nazir. What's a nazir?
One who abstains.
Oh, so a nazir is someone who's separated, right? Who's separated from certain earthly pleasures. Mm-hmm. Kilomar shehin zarta vifrashto sami b'nei adam below asisa mehem hefker. So what does it mean? It means that you treated these grapes as separate, as set aside, just like a nazir is sort of set aside and elevated. So lo sivtzor osam ad shetafkirem. So you did something bad. You weren't supposed to do this on the Shemitah year. That you were not supposed to set aside your grapes. You were supposed to allow everyone who wants to come into your vineyard and take your grapes. So, even if you did that, lo sivtzar osam ad shetafkirem, you should not harvest them until you do the proper method of rendering them ownerless, or treating them as ownerless, rather, in the Shemitah year. Keinu das Rashi, zichrono l'racha. That's what Rashi writes in his commentary on the Chumash. Ki usover shashomer sadeu peros shad b'shvias, ein haperos nesarin. So one, you could have thought that what the pasuk means is that if in vein zirecha is talking about grapes that you treated incorrectly with regard to the laws of Shvias, so it could mean that you should not harvest at all grapes that you treated incorrectly. Meaning, if you put a fence around your vineyard, mm-hmm. and you put guards there, little guard posts, you know, to shoot anyone who comes in the vineyard. So that is highly, that's first of all, not to do that in general, because you're not to kill people just for, because they come steal your grapes. Okay. But you're not allowed to do that, especially on Shvias, because you're supposed to treat it as Hefker. So you might have thought that what it meant is if you put a fence around your grapes, you treated them as a separate and as if it's for yourself, then you're not allowed to harvest them at all. Meaning that the pasuk is teaching us the adin of shamur. Remember last time we were discussing the possibility that there is a machlokas rishonim regarding produce that was treated incorrectly vis-a-vis Shemitah, that somebody guarded their produce on Shemitah, is that fruit forbidden to be eaten or not? So here Rashi's telling us that the fruit may still be eaten. You're required to treat it as Hefker, and you harvest the vineyard as if it's Hefker, and anybody else can come and harvest the vineyard that they want. So you're not allowed to treat it as separate and harvest it. You have to be mafkir them. You have to treat them as ownerless and then harvest it. However, there are rishonim who hold that this din shamur is true. There is such a din as shamur, that if you guard your produce on the Shemitah year, then the fruit becomes forbidden to be eaten.
I'm just a little confused here. What does the prohibition against private ownership, as it were, of the fruit have to do with particular shinoi you might use in collecting it?
Because if you treat it as if you own it, then you're going to go in, you're going to harvest all the fruit at one time, you're going to treat it like a normal year. But if you treat it as ownerless, then you're going to think, oh, someone else, you know, is going to come along soon. I'm going to harvest. I want a fig now, so I'm going to cut off a fig from the tree and eat it.
What about if I want a bunch of figs? Because I've got a big family. I've got 24 kids. I need at least 48 figs.
How many wives do you have? So it doesn't mean literally that it has to be one by one. It has to be in, you know, just the amount that you want to eat right now, as opposed to harvest and sell and, you know, treat the right. If you have a lot of kids at home, so you're going to need more than one fig in order to feed them. Then you'd be allowed to harvest more than one fig.
If you take them like one by one, if there happened to be a couple other people standing around, they would have a chance to get in.
Exactly. But if you go in with your workers and your fig harvesters and you take all the figs from the trees, then that means that you're treating it as if it's your own. So again, Rashi doesn't hold that this is true, that there is such a din. And that's the sheet that most Rishonim, that there is no such a din, and that even if you incorrectly guarded your field during the Shemitah year, the produce may still be eaten. However, I think the general minag, at least lechatchila, in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, is to be machmir on this. Although, we know that most shittas hold that it's okay. So, therefore, in certain situations, we would be mekal on this. V'chein kosa beperusha besukka v'yevamos. Rashi wrote this not only in his commentary on the Chumash, but in his commentary on the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, in Maseches Yevamos. The Sefer Chinuch here is actually quoting the language of the Ramban in his commentary on the Chumash, that the Ramban brings Rashi. He's going to disagree with Rashi, as we see in a minute, with his, not in terms of the halacha, but in terms of his exact taich of the pasuk. So the Ramban agrees that the halacha is that shamur is allowed, that if you guarded your field, the produce does not become forbidden to be eaten. And it's the truth is, he says here that it's true midin haTorah. It sounds like maybe you could think that what he means is midaraisa, that's true, that if you guarded your field, it does not forbid the produce to be eaten. But midrabanan, the Chachamim said, no, we're going to penalize people who do this. and we're going to, if you guarded your produce, so we're going to declare that the produce may not be eaten. So that's not true. The Rishonim hold that there's no such din as shamor on a deraisa level, agree that there's no such thing as shamor, no such thing as shamor on a derabanan level either. The point is, the reason he says here midin haTorah, that on a biblical level it is permitted, because those who say, the Rishonim who say that there is a problem of shamor, hold that it's a prohibition midaraisa. So he's saying, no, there's no such prohibition midaraisa, there's no such prohibition midarabanan either. Yeah.
However, there are other reasons why, in fact, you want to restrict the public from going into your vineyard and, say, taking all the grapes they want. Like, say, the Yardane, you know, like, what was it? If you went in a Shemitah year, but if you went into a vineyard, they'd let you go ahead and take all the grapes, you might damage the vines.
Yes, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point.
I mean, practically, well, what happens if you do that in a Shemitah year in Israel? You know, do they, if they...
Come on in. No, you're allowed. You're allowed technically, but that could be, that's part of the reason for the system of what's called Otzer Bezdin, where there's a whole discussion about how exactly to implement that. And according to some interpretations, maybe it's not acceptable, but according to the majority of Shita, so some sort of Otzer Bezdin system is acceptable based on the Tosefta. So that's part of the reason that the Bezdin saw that people were not treating each other right during the Shemitah year. So they said, okay, we're taking charge. We are the emissaries of the whole Jewish people. So we are going to be the ones to harvest, to be responsible for harvesting the fields. So they would go into a vineyard with their designated workers, the Bezdin in the city, some sort of shini, but they would go in, they would harvest, and then they would take charge of the distribution. You know, whoever wanted would come, and they would pay a set fee, saying this is covering, you know, the labor of the people who harvested the field for you. But essentially, it was open to anyone who needed this this produce. It was, so that was the Otzer Bezdin system, which was sort of like a compromise between everything literally being a free-for-all and keeping ownership. I mean, it's not a compromise. You're not allowed to keep ownership. But this was a system. The Bezdin felt that this was the best. As emissaries of the Jewish people, they felt that this system was the best for the Jewish people to function agriculturally during the Shemitah year. So without breaking any of the laws of Shemitah, they established this system. So that that could be part of the reason. Now you want to have people who know what they're doing harvesting the fields, as opposed to we city dwellers, if we go into a vineyard, you know, here, this looks like a delicious grape. No, that was for the, you know, special reserve Cabernet, you know, you are not...
Well, the question is whether you'd actually start pulling out the, you know, like, damaging the...
Well, that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to do that. Whether you can do it accidentally because you don't know what you're doing is a different story. Yeah.
But, you know, no, I mean, the very expensive grapes or cheap grapes shouldn't make any difference. After all, like, Otzer Bezdin...
In a correct Otzer Bezdin system... That's correct, that if it's grapes that are normally used for the special super reserve $100 bottle of wine, and the ones that are normally used for the $10 bottle of wine, so it should not really affect the price of the finished product during the Shemitah year, because you're not allowed to charge for the quality of the grapes, that the grapes are fundamentally after, you're only allowed to charge for the labor, the people who harvested it. I pointed out last time that maybe you'd be allowed to charge a little more for the wine that's normally the super expensive wine, because there's more labor involved, because maybe you need to get the special oak barrels in order to age it, or, you know, it's just more intense. You have to keep checking it to make sure it's fermenting properly. There's more labor involved than what's normally a $100 bottle of wine, but it's not allowed to be $100. One might be, one bottle is $10, one bottle might be $30, but it's not going to be the normal price differential.
So that's the year to go shopping.
Well, you have a lot of restrictions on this wine. Your wine has to be drunk. Okay, normally people who purchase $100 bottles of wine, hopefully they're not going to be wasting it. They're going to drink the entire bottle. But you have to drink everything. You can't, for example, use it for Havdalah if you spill over the, you know, wine. You can't...
Can you use it for cooking? Well, you wouldn't want to use a $100 bottle of wine.
No, you wouldn't.
You're not allowed to use it for cooking, but it's a shaila, it's a machlokes, as to whether you're allowed to cook the wine at all for Shemitah. That there's a difference of opinion amongst the Tanoim as to whether Bishol, cooking the wine, actually makes it better or makes it worse. So it could be that it doesn't mean that it makes it better in terms of taste, but it makes it a better, superior product because it lasts longer. It becomes more like syrupy. It kills, I don't know. Whatever. So it, in those days, cooking the wine made it last longer. So we assume that, except for those of us who are very much connoisseurs and can tell the difference between a mevushel bottle of wine and a non-mevushel bottle of wine, so we assume that nowadays, since cooking the wine really just involves pasteurization, so that is certainly good. Of course, there are opinions that just pasteurizing wine doesn't even make it mevushel for the laws of laws of having a non-Jew touching it per se. But the minhag in America is to be lenient on that based on Rav Moshe Feinstein. In Eretz Yisrael, a lot more people are machmer on that based on the ruling of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. But even Rav Moshe holds that pasteurizing wine is called cooking wine, would agree that you're allowed to cook it during the Shemitah year because it's not really considered damaging it.
So in practice, what do they do? I mean, the vineyards and so on.
Yeah.
Do they basically just leave the grapes and not do anything with them? Or do they actually try to make, you know, I've seen occasionally bottles of Otzer Bezdin.
Wasn't it this past
year? Right, a couple years ago. Sukkos, we had
that was Otzer Bezdin. So that was, okay. I mean, it shouldn't be exported to Chutz Laaretz, really, but once it is, then you're allowed to drink it.
But, I mean, in other words, in practice, what do they do? Do they just say it's not worth it to go through the whole thing? Or they just leave it on, you know, they just...
Either they just leave it, or they use Heter Mechira, or they use Otzer Bezdin. Yeah. You have three. I don't know what each winery does. I mean, there's certain wineries that produce Heter Mechira. There's certain wineries that produce Otzer Bezdin, and certain wineries that you just don't see the 2015 vintage ever. So they don't bother, especially, you know, if they have. I don't know. I don't know what the policies of the Hashgachos are, but I would assume. But the real wines with the wineries with more heavy-duty hashgachos, I would say, often don't produce at all during the Shemitah year because perhaps the hashgacha won't allow it. The OU, for example, you know, wineries that are normally under the OU during the Shemitah year, if they have Heter Mechira or Otzer Bezdin, they would just won't put the OU. They'll leave the OU off the label for that year. But you could imagine that there would be another hashgacha that was more b'shitadik against the Heter Mechira that wouldn't allow the wineries that are normally under their hashgacha to produce wines under their label during the Shemitah year with Heter Mechira, lest people get confused and think, oh, this winery is normally under Badatz X, so oh, it must be this, I see this label, so I must be, and they just whip it off the shelf and they wouldn't realize that it's Heter Mechira wine.
So what's the deal? If it usually has the OU and it doesn't because of this business you just described, you're not supposed to use it?
I didn't say you can't use it. Shouldn't buy it, ideally.
What?
Yeah, it should. First of all, it shouldn't be exported to Chutz Laaretz, because the Shemitah produce is supposed to stay in Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
But if it is exported to Chutz Laaretz and you find yourself in possession of it by mistake, then there is a way to do it.
As we did, in fact, we looked at the bottle and it did not have the OU on it. It was just like, you know,
correct.
You know.
Yeah.
It didn't have the OU. There's
no American Hechsher that will put their Hechsher on a Shemitah wine. I can't say there's none, maybe, you know, Tablet K or something. We give Hechsher to Heter Mechira.
It said a lot of things.
What?
Uh-huh. It wasn't that it didn't have a Hechsher. It's that when we looked, it said...
Otzer Bezdin.
Right.
Otzer Bezdin, Shemitah year, and then we had to finish the bottle right then.
Oh.
Regular American Hechsherim that are giving their Hashgachos to wines in Eretz Yisrael do not put their Hechsher on any wine that is Shemitah wine, even if it was produced in a halachically acceptable manner, according to their standards. Just as a matter of policy.
During this Shemitah year, what do you do?
Well, In Israel, it's not a problem. That's mutter. That's allowed. That's encouraged. It's a mitzvah, possibly, to drink Shemitah wine.
So, but in the United States,
there's wine that's produced here.
So you do it from the year before.
Wine keeps.
It's only that year.
Oh, you
it's
use
not
the wine
that,
from the... Okay.
Right. So that's why... Yeah. With Israeli wines, there was there was a certain time after 2015, which was the Shemitah year, a Shemitah harvest... that you had to choose between older wines, you had to choose the 2014 and the 2016 hadn't come out yet. So if it's an okay wine, so 2014 should still be good a couple years later, but some of the lower quality wines, you know, you want to have them as fast as possible. So it was a little bit that you couldn't get the low quality Israeli wines that would still be fresh at that time. But now, in the middle of the Shemitah cycle, it's not such a problem.
It's not exactly on topic, but it's close enough.
Yeah.
What is this business about? Some people, I don't understand what the deal is, so just tell me what the story is. That apparently, you know, there's mevushel, so if you're having non-Jews at the table, so you can, you know, it's not such a big problem with the wine. Why, there are people who prefer not to use mevushel. Why is that? Why do they prefer not to use mevushel?
For what?
For anything.
Well, if either they're going because of the taste, that they feel that even the slight bishul that we do nowadays in terms of pasteurization affects the taste and quality of the wine. That's usually the case, that the really expensive wines are not mevushel. But there are halachic reasons.
Yeah, I don't care about the other stuff. But
the Rambam holds that you're not allowed to use mevushel wine for Kiddush Friday night.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there is a whole school of thought in the Rishonim that mevushel wine is shahakal. So obviously you're not allowed to use that for any type of Kiddush or Havdalah at all. Maybe Havdalah because of Chamar Medina. Maybe Havdalah for Chamar Medina, but Friday night for sure not. So, but the Rambam does not hold that. The Rambam holds that in general, Mevushal wine is Bar Priya Gofen, which is what we hold. We're not Choshish at all for the Shita that Mevushal wine is Shahakol. But the Rambam even though he holds Mevushal wine is Bar Priya Gofen, so he holds that it's possible for Kiddush Friday night because it couldn't be used as a libation on the altar. And the Gemara in Matzeches Bava Basra seems to make a comparison between the laws of wine as acceptable for libations and the laws of wine that are acceptable for Kiddush. So it's a question how far you take that. Other Rishonim say that since Mevushal does not significantly impact the quality, or maybe according to some approaches maybe even makes it better, then you'd be allowed to use it for Kiddush Friday night as well. So that's why some people don't like to use it for Kiddush Friday night. But in terms of the Shahakol business, so the contemporary poskim say that even if you hold that Yain Mevushal is saves you, the pasteurization saves you from, and is considered Mevushal to the extent that non-Jews would be allowed to touch it and would still be considered kosher, handle it. Nevertheless, everybody would agree that pasteurized wine is not Shahakol, because the difference between that and regular wine is really not significant enough.
So when you're talking about touching the wine, you're talking about touching the bottle or touching the wine?
No, if you touch the bottle, that's not a problem. But if you, it depends. If you move the bottle, it could be a problem. If you shake the bottle, if you pour the wine, if you actually touch the wine itself, unless the bottle is closed. If the bottle is closed, then it's not a problem.
Closed. Yeah. So what's the problem if the bottle is closed and you shook it?
It's not a problem.
It's not a problem.
Not a problem. So I'm talking about if the bottle is open. Okay.
There's a chumrah that you non-Jews shouldn't look at it. I think from Crown Heights they.
Alpi Kabbalah, there's certain things, Alpi Kabbalah, some suggest that, some are makbid on this, some chassidim, people of that persuasion, more Kabbalistically inclined, hold that even if a non-Jew looks at the wine, then it's also a problem. You see that occasionally on wine bottles, that it says, Nasa lelo ri'yas akum. This wine was made without the sight of non-Jews. Some people go so far with this that they're makbid to buy only wine, let's say kedem wine, in sealed boxes. Uh-huh. Sealed boxes, you know, with a tape around it directly, you know, from the factory to the wine store, you know, so no non-Jew should ever have seen the wine. But many poskim point out that this doesn't make too much sense because even if they touch it, if it's in a closed bottle, it's okay. So if they see it in a closed bottle, it's worse? How could it be worse? That's not even halachically a problem at all. But there are some people who are makbid, even if they saw it through the bottle. Okay, but most people in the non-Hasidic community are not concerned about this in the slightest, even if they verily looked at the wine in your glass. On top of the glass, not even through the glass. It doesn't matter. We are only makbid on the halacha. We're only makbid on the halacha that they're not allowed to handle. I mean, they're allowed to handle it. It's just not kosher afterwards. Okay.
Does Rashi weigh in on this issue at all? He had vineyards, right?
Which issue?
This issue about, you know, what kind of wine.
Well, Rashi holds Yain Mevushal Shakal. Yeah, Rashi's one of the people who holds that. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Now, by the way, is there any distinction between wine that's kosher for Kiddush and for the Arbakosos?
That's a good question. So for the four cups, well, you could imagine that there is that. That for the first cup, which is Kiddush, so you might imagine that the Rambam would hold that Yain Mevushal was no good for the first cup, but for the rest of the cups, since he holds his Bari Priya Gofen and there's no din that they're making Kiddush on them. So he would hold that the Yain Mevushal is okay for the last three cups, but not for the first. However, the Yerushalmi states that Yain Mevushal is acceptable for the four cups without making any conditions, which is how many Rishonim learn, not like the Rambam. Mm-hmm. They say Yain Mevushal is acceptable for Kiddush because the Yerushalmi just says that Yain Mevushal is acceptable for the four cups, meaning all four cups, even the first one,
right.
Which is the cup of Kiddush. So yes, if you didn't have this Yerushalmi, you could imagine that there would be a difference between what wines are acceptable for the four cups and ones that are acceptable for Kiddush. But the Yerushalmi basically seems to equate them, but on the lenient side.
Mm-hmm.
that anything that's acceptable, and basically the Yerushalmi says any wine is acceptable with four cups. The Yerushalmi says even spiced wine, not pure wine, but has maybe sugar added to it, will also be acceptable for the four cups. But okay, so again, if you but maybe the Rambam holds, it's possible the Rambam holds that the Talmud Bavli disagrees with the Talmud Yerushalmi, and the Talmud Bavli holds maybe that Yain Mevushal is puzzle for Kiddush. So therefore, maybe there's room to be machmir to have non-mevushal wine for the first cup, but for the last three cups, I'm sorry, then you could have mevushal wine.
But Kiddush is going at the table.
If you have a goy at the table, then I would recommend using mevushal wine for the first cup as well, because you're just going to create problems. And we hold that mevushal wine, as the Shulchan Aruch says, that the main shita is that mevushal wine is acceptable for Kiddush. Although this year, you're only allowed, if you want to have a goy at your Seder for some reason, you're only allowed the first night. Okay? Because it's Shabbos. If you want to have a non-Jew at your Seder, you're only allowed the first night, because the first night is Shabbos. When it's just Yontif, you're not allowed to invite non-Jews to meals, including the Seder.
You're not allowed to cook for a non-Jew on
Yontif. Suppose you cook for an army, and he happens to show up.
Doesn't matter. It's a gzera that anybody, you know, things could be cooked on Yontif all the time they're not expecting. You can prepare a cup of tea, for example. You know, fresh. You don't think that just because you thought you prepared everything in advance that something won't come up that, okay.
Supposing I have 8 people around my table generally, and I prepared for like 15, and 1 or 2 people show up.
No, if a non-Jew just shows up, then you're allowed to seat them, but you're not allowed to invite them in advance for the meals on Yontif. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you could take control of the bottle. You suddenly perceive yourself in a dangerous situation and pour for everybody, right?
You could, but it's still
and pour.
It's possible to serve non-mevushal wine with non-Jews at the table. However, I think most people would just be more comfortable the wine, served at a meal with non-Jews would be mevushal. Any Yontif, you're not allowed to invite a non-Jew to a meal.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, unless it falls on Shabbos, in which case you're not allowed to cook at all, so there's no concern that you would cook for the non-Jew. Yeah.
So if a non-Jew, though, would report non-mevushal wine, and then just have to spill a little bit on the plate, would the plate be,
Well, it's not hot.
Huh? Oh, okay. All right. So
I always thought about this, because in Israel, the minhag in America is that restaurants never ever serve non-mevushal wine, but in Israel, restaurants do serve non-mevushal wine. The mashgiach opens it.
They all do.
Mashgiach opens it, puts it down on the table, and said, "What you do now is your business. I don't know who's in your party. Not, Bechalalei Shabbos, non-Jews, all these types. I don't care. It's your responsibility to make sure about the wine." That's the way, even in Mahadra and Israeli restaurants, that they do it. So I always wonder, how do they know? Like, if you have a soup, you're serving a scalding hot soup at the table, how do you know that the non-Jew might not spill some wine into the soup?
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe he spills the whole glass. Whoops, maybe it's a really clumsy non-Jew. So it's hard to keep control over it. That's what I'm saying. Okay, you have kulas, maybe it's a klisheni, and all these different...
What's the problem with the...
Or when they have, when you have the glasses, there could be wine left in a glass, and then you have an Arab busboy taking the glasses back to the kitchen, and then maybe washing it in hot water without soap first. I'm not saying there might be ways to get out of it, b'dievid, and you don't have to be concerned for it. The possibility that wine that was touched by someone who's not supposed to be touching wine will forbid the vessels of the restaurant or your house, should such a thing happen. So, but I never understood why on earth Mahadran restaurants would allow themselves to get into this potential issue. And in your house, so you probably would notice it. So then, if there were really a problem, you could ask a shayla and put the vessel aside.
Isn't it because practically the Israelis don't accept the mevushal standard of the Americans, so they don't have an out on that?
Better than nothing. You know what I mean?
Is that what they think?
At least vis-a-vis the vessels,
Really? I don't think the Mahadran places think that way.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Things libations, for pagans?
That's why nowadays, in Maseches Avodah Zarah, it says that wine that was even just handled by a non-Jew and not expressly used in a libation is forbidden even b'hanah, to derive any benefit from it. We know that if a wine was actually used as a libation, then on a deraisa level, so that's forbidden to derive any hanah out of it. But here, the Chazal extended it to that even if a non-Jew handled it in any way, because we're concerned that they might have made a libation. However, so that's why the poskim say that nowadays, since the non-Jews, most of them are not... This is Shiloh about Christians, okay? The whole discussion of the Rishonim. Most of the non-Jews are not really of the Avodah Zarah. They're not really worshippers of idols or multiple deities. So therefore, their wine, and because it's not normal to offer libations anymore, the non-Jews don't just, you know, in the olden days, at a meal, the non-Jew would be sitting with wine, pour a little bit off in honor of the deity. So nowadays, people don't do that anymore. Non-Jews don't do that anymore. Which is why that nowadays, wine handled by a non-Jew, in most circumstances, is not going to be asur bahana. It's not going to be asur to derive benefit from it. It's only going to be asur bishtia, only asur to drink it. Because Chazal also, part of the reason that they instituted this gzeira against even wine that was handled by a non-Jew, not just expressly poured in libation for Avodah Zarah, was that they wanted to create distance. That wine is a very social beverage, and they didn't want Jews and they wanted new Jews and non-Jews to think twice before drinking
but
together.
They didn't drink whiskey together and beer, so, you know, what's...
Yeah, but they thought that wine was the most chasha beverage of this type, and it was more likely to lead to intermarriage than just whiskey. Yeah.
They didn't have whiskey, and beer was much weaker.
Wine, when you harvest the grapes and you press them...
And when they're pressed, wine? Yeah, grapes. But non-Jew handles grapes, it's okay. As once they're pressed and they become juicy, that's a problem. But in terms of the four cups, there are other preferences in terms of red wine, which again the Yerushalmi also says is preferred for the four cups. And the Bavli, you know, seems to, according to many shittas, implies is preferred for Kiddush as well. But maybe, yeah, the Ramban holds that white wine is pasul for Kiddush all year long. You know, to make to use white wine, not for Kiddush Friday night, not. So, but there's a special preference for the four cups because it's reminiscent for the blood that that our ancestors spilled in Egypt, that, you know, with their hard labor, and that the Egyptians killed them. So it's and red wine in halacha is considered more chashuv, considered more important. That's what was used. Therefore, it's preferable to use red wine for the Seder, except in times when there were blood libels. In which case, they used white wine for the Seder because they were concerned that if there was blood-like things around, it would just incite the non-Jews to think that we used it for the matzah as well. Okay. The simple answer to your question is that there is a lot of similarity between what's required for the four cups and what's required for Kiddush, but there are different shittas about how exactly the same they are, and there are some shittas that you could imagine that there are slight differences between the two.
So in other words, if you really want to be, you know, Machmir Kvei Dol Shittas, you'd have red wine, unsweetened, non-mavushal.
I'm sure that's a big imposition on you.
Huh? Oh, okay.
Of course.
All right. Well,
the chap, all the chumras. Okay, fine.
Well, one last basic one.
Yeah.
Is that if you are making a bracha koron on wine from Eretz Yisrael, you should say, you know...
Al Eretz El Peru, Sel Pri Gafna.
Okay, that's for real, or is that just like that's some real. Zionistic,
No, that's real.
Okay, Gafna.
That's real. You would say either way, but it's a real thing. Masha Amru B'Toras Kohanim, what does the Halachic Medrash on Sefer Baker say? Ves Inevei Nezirecha Lo Siv Tzor. You should not... Just to clarify, I'm not saying that you have to use a particular wine for the four cups. I was just expounding on the different shittas about which wine can be used. That the most important thing is to drink a wine that one enjoys, as opposed to, you know, the four cups is supposed to be a nice, happy, festive type of beverage. So if you're, you know, that's not correct. That's not a correct approach to the mitzvah of the four cups. If you like sweet wine, you should drink sweet wine. But those who enjoy red, unsweetened, non-mavushal, dry wine certainly should use that for the four cups, in addition to the fact that it's what they like better. There are halachic advantages, especially for Kiddush, to using such wine. Okay. Mashamar b'toras kohanim, bes inevein zirecha lo sitzor, you shall not harvest the grapes of your separation. Mina shamur ba'aretz iata botzer. You should not harvest from what is guarded. Aval botzer atam in a mufkar, but you're allowed to harvest from what you declared ownerless. Nefarish l'dateinu zemin hashamur baretz iyat abotzer beotchi hey shamur asur l'chaliv tzomem. You could think that this Toras Kohanim is that's indeed the way Rabbeinu Tam and the Rishonim who forbid shamur. They bring this Toras Kohanim as a proof to say that shamur is a problem. That if you guarded it, then it forbids the fruit to be eaten forever. But he says, no, that's not what it means. According to Moshe Rishonim, what it means is that you're not allowed to harvest it at the time that you are guarding it. Meaning, You guarded it for a while. Okay, you were a bad boy or a girl, and then you're going to now you, when you harvest it, you have to open it up to everyone. But doesn't the Torah's Kohanim, according to the Sefer Chinuch and the interpretation of Moshe Rishonim, doesn't mean that it's prohibited to eat the fruits forever once you guarded it during the Shemitah year. The Haramban Zichrono Livracha. What does the Ramban say? He disagrees with the Rashi. Perish Nizirecha Kilomar Gefen Shilo Avadu Velo Zimroso. Rashi said that when it's the pasuk says in vain is irecha, it's referring to the field that you treated incorrectly. So you're not allowed to harvest it while treating it incorrectly. Rather, you have to open it up to everyone. The Ramban says no. In vain is irecha means it's the field that you treated correctly, that you set it aside and you didn't touch it. Not that you set it aside and prevented everyone else from accessing it. You set it aside and didn't touch it, which is correct for the Shemitah year. That's the what it's called when you don't touch the grapevines. What it means is not if you guarded your field and you have to be mafkere, you have to treat it as if everyone should take from it. No, what it means is even a field that you treated properly during Shemitah, you're not allowed to harvest in the normal manner. Uh-huh. It's just a different taich in the pasuk, but halachically, they're basically the same. The Choshigen Kerem Shenevad. So, even a shomor, a vineyard that was guarded, one is not allowed to harvest. One is still allowed to harvest, I'm sorry. So even if you didn't just guard it, but you actually worked the land in an improper manner, the fruit is still permissible. However, nevertheless, so we pointed out last time that there are many shitas that hold that that land that was improperly worked during Shemitah is, in fact, prohibited to derive benefit from midrabanan. Okay, which is part of the problem of the Heter Mechira, that if you don't hold it works, that it could be that the fruits will have the status of Nevad, of a vineyard that was improperly worked. So again, B'dieved, again, there are kulas about these things, but okay. That's why people try not to purchase Heter Mechira if they don't, especially in America, where we as a collective community, based on the rulings of our American rabbinate, we're not supposed to rely on it, because for us, there's no emergency situation, and even Eretz Yisrael, obviously it's questionable whether it's an emergency situation, but here in America we have plenty of fruit even without that, so it's certainly not an emergency situation to rely that would enable us to rely on the Heter Mechira according to those who allow it. Okay. Shorish mitzvah zo. The reasoning is as follows. E mitzvah shviyah shelefaneo echadu. It's the same as the other things that we talked about of the Shemitah year. Again, we discussed last time that the reason is that in order to emphasize that the land belongs to God, and I explained last time that it's only derabana nowadays, Shemitah, because there's no Yovel, and it's only in Eretz Yisrael. It's found in the Mishnayis and the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi and Masechet Shviyas. Sham Yisbaru kol dinei mitzvos elu barucha tizke v'tilmod v'tilamed. He's giving his son a bracha that you should, now that you learn my very short introduction in the Sefer HaChinuch to the mitzvah of Shemitah, now you have to go learn Masechet Shviyas. Don't think that just because you read the Cliff's Notes, so to speak, that it gets you out of reading the whole book. You have to read the whole book if you really want to become an expert in the Torah. Okay, mitzvah shin lamed. Get a little. Can make a little start on this. Mitzvah shin lamed. 330. Mitzvah sviras sheva shabosos shabsoshanim. The mitzvah to count 7 groups of 7 years. Limnos hashanim sheva sheva shanim. So if we count the years 7 by 7, adchnas hayovel, until we get to the jubilee year. Yovel, right? Jubilee. Beretz Yisrael achar hisnachalenu ba. This only in Eretz Yisrael after we organized it already according to the proper residence and habitation of the land of Israel. Shneamar v'sofarta lecha sheva shabesos shanim sheva shanim sheva pamim. You should count seven-year cycles, 7 years seven times, until you get to the 50th year. V'zos ha-mitzvah, what's this mitzvah? Kolomar zos ha-sfira shel shnei ha-shmitah ha-chnas ha-yovel, he nimseres levezden ha-godol. Who does this counting? Is there a mitzvah every year that on Rosh Hashanah you say, Asher kishad mitzvos ha-vetzivanu al sfiras ha-yovel, hayom shana achas la-yovel, or hayom sheva shanim sheim shmitah achas la-yovel, something like that. So no, not every individual has to do that, but the Bezdin HaGadol does have to do that. And on Rosh Hashanah every year, and the Sanhedrin, someone would get up and say, Hayom, and Hayom, Hashanah,
yeah.
This is the first year of the Shemitah, the second year of the Shemitah, of the Yovel, and again, when you, same as way in Sfiras HaOmer, so when you get to seven, you get to 7 days of Sfiras HaOmer, so then you have to say, this is 1 week to the Omer. So when you get to the first Shemitah, they would say, there's a 7 years, which is one Shemitah cycle, and then 14 years would be the second Shemitah cycle, etc. V'chein hi ha-mitzvah, shahayu monim shana shana, v'shavua shavua. They count year by year and 7 years by 7 years. Shel shanim ad shnas ha-yovel, kemo sha'anu monim yimei ha-omer, similar to how we count Sfiras HaOmer, something that's coming up. V'achar kach mekadshin shnas ha-chamishim b'shvis ha-saretz l'kroz dror l'chol avadim. So what happens in the Jubilee year? In the Jubilee year, you have, it's the same laws as the Shemitah year regarding the working of the land. And you proclaim liberty to the avadim, l'chol avadim v'ashvachos. And there's liberty for all the slaves and maidservants, which are female slaves. V'chol ha-karkos chozun l'valeyan. And all the land goes back to the original owner, with some exceptions. But basically, that's how it goes.